Welcome to the Master Your Health podcast. My name is Amanda Meixner, aka MeowMix on Instagram. I'm best known for my meal prep and nutrition content. Today I'm here with my co-host, the research junkie between the two of us, and a great fitness coach, Chris Rocchio.
Hello, everyone.
Today we're chatting with Jennifer, aka Kids Eat in Color on Instagram. She's a registered dietitian, but more importantly, she's an experienced mom, and she's very experienced with helping moms transition their kids to a healthier lifestyle. What I really liked about this episode was her psychological tips and tricks when it came to having your kid not only eat healthier, but enjoy eating healthier.
Yeah, it was those psychological tricks that really stood out for me the most, because it's kind of counterintuitive. Like, when I had originally decided I wanted kids, I was going to have a certain approach to it. But this makes you kind of rethink some things. So those are the things that I really liked about this podcast, was putting some practicality behind all the advice that you get and the sea of advice around child rearing and things like that. So I really liked this podcast, and some of the things are very surprising, and I think you will too. So let's get into it, and let us know what you think.
And I'd like to welcome Jennifer to the podcast.
Hi, Amanda.
Hey. So I wanted to ask you our first question. What got you into kids nutrition, and why are you so passionate about it?
Great question. So when I had my first child, things were going pretty well with him up until 6 months, and then he started to not gain weight. And, you know, I was listening to the pediatrician. We were doing what they said, except he still wasn't gaining weight. And pretty soon he... the pediatrician said, hey, I think he might need some Pediasure. I was like, what? And at that point, I think something really changed for me, because I was like, something in this weaning process, something in his eating or what I'm serving him is not getting him the nutrition that he needs, or something else is going on. And so I really started to think about, what does my child need? How can I meet him where he's at? And we actually stabilized his weight, had him growing again by serving a very high calorie diet. And we did, Pediasure is a medical drink and has medical uses, but I wanted to try a food first intervention with him, and that's what I did, and that actually worked. Fast forward to when he was between two and three, he started to fall off the growth chart height wise. Which again can be a big issue. Usually that's genetic, but it can also be nutrition related, it could be disease related, all sorts of things. So I did a nutrition assessment on him. We also did a bunch of, you know, medical tests to make sure he was okay that way. And then I again realized he was not eating enough calories. So this is something that some kids do. They just don't eat enough to grow. And that's got several different names, but the bottom line is I needed to really dive into the kids' nutrition, the pediatric nutrition, and say, what's going on here? How do I assess this? And how do we move forward with a child who's not gaining enough weight? Because we know if you pressure a kid, that can lead to less weight gain in the long term for an underweight kid.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So pressure is one of these things that parents think makes a lot of sense. And it seems like it's going to make a lot of sense, because you're like, well, I'm the parent and I know what's best for my child, and so I'm going to help them do that. But all the research shows that when we pressure kids, bad things happen. Mm. And they might seem to be working in the short run, but in the long term, you have the kid who's then not eating enough or eating too much or a lot of things. So I really, really tried, my husband and I both tried really hard to provide that environment that encouraged him to eat without pressuring him. And that is really, like, that experience is where all my passion comes from, helping parents work through tough situations.
So what's the deal? Are you just trying to not kind of have the implication to your kid that he's doing something wrong? Or he or her, you know, so is that what the psychological element to that is? Or
I'd say there's some of that. So what we see is there's several different types of parenting. There's parents who have a lot of nurturing, a lot of warmth, and then there's, which is important, and there's parents who don't, and then there's parents who have a lot of structure, and there's parents who don't. And if you think of it kind of like in a 2x2 grid, what you want to strive for is having a lot of warmth and nurturing for your child, and also having a lot of structure, mm-hmm. and and control, not control, but structure in the parenting so that the child feels secure and knows the boundaries, but also is able to feel emotionally nurtured and can learn to tune into what their body needs. Because if you're forcing your kid to take a bite, a couple things can happen. One is they want to please you. And so they're going to ignore their internal body cues in order to please you. And you say, well, just take one more bite of the broccoli because it's good for you. And they say, well, okay, I want my daddy to love me. And so I'm going to take a bite of broccoli. Maybe they're allergic to broccoli. Maybe they had a stomach ache, or maybe their body just didn't want broccoli at that moment because it didn't have enough calories or something. And so when we encourage them in that pressure way, they do something that maybe their body didn't like. Another thing that we find is kids, they can fight against the parent. Like maybe they have just, you know, some kids are strong-willed and they don't want to do it. So if you say, this is good for you, they're like, well, then I'm not going to do it.
And they're going to do the opposite.
Yeah. This isn't a bad thing in and of itself, but it can lead to a lot of food battles. And believe me, food battles are not where you want to be.
And that's not necessarily exclusive to children either.
No, exactly.
Like adults do that well into later years.
Exactly right. And what we really want kids is we want them coming to the table. We want to help them become competent eaters in the long run. So we want them coming to the table. We want them listening to their body. We want them to be able to choose from what's available. What we also find is parents who are very authoritarian, meaning they have a lot of structure in the house, but not very much nurturing. They have rules like this many bites of this, and then you get that. And then what ends up happening is kids, whatever that is, whatever that reward is, whether it's grapes or cupcake or it doesn't even matter, kids hear, oh, well, that cupcake must be really good. And my parents are setting up these rules because this is bad. So that broccoli, that must be crappy. And so, yeah, I'm going to eat it to get that cupcake. But now for the rest of my life, I'm really going to want that cupcake and I'm not going to want that broccoli. And we see a lot of parents, what research shows is if you are controlling what your kids are eating, they will eat more broccoli in the short run. And they develop less of an intrinsic desire for that food in the long run.
So you have to, like, I'm guessing from what you're saying, you have to find that balance between structure and letting them listen to their bodies.
Yes.
So, okay. And that's like a lot of what you teach people is kind of finding that balance. So how would you provide some structure around nutrition? Like, how do you do that without going too far?
Right.
Yes.
I think like with everything, it's all about learning how to do it. So if you're just starting out and you're like, oh no, I've been doing it all wrong, that's okay. It's okay to start wherever you're at. Where I like to start with is the structure. So as a parent, you want to really own the fact that you have the structure in your house for mealtime. So you decide what the meal schedule is going to be, and you have planned meals and snacks. And this doesn't have to be 100% rigid, because you do want to be listening to your child. But in general, you want to know when is breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and kids need to eat, depending on their age, need to eat every 2 to 4 hours. So you want to have those planned meals and planned snacks. And if a child wants something in between those opportunities, you could give them water, right? And that's where you say, this is my hard line. We just had snack. Snack is over. You're going to need to wait till lunch. Or whatever that is.
Nice. I like that. Simple. Yeah. That's simple.
Yeah. It's simple and it's super important, even for adults. Like, we don't want to be eating all day. That's not what
Chris.
Our body needs. I'm gaining right now.
No,
I think still have a snack every 2 hours, right?
Yeah, we eat often.
Yeah. Right. And that's fine.
But what about, say, you've already gone down the wrong path, like you're giving the kid the chips and the cookies and things for snacks, but then all of a sudden you say you want to flip the script and you want to say, okay, I want to reverse it from now on, but you've already set the precedent. The kid has its habits, he has his cravings, and now all he wants is bread with dinner and snacking in between.
Yeah, so, you know, wherever you're at, it's never too late to make changes. Depending on the family, you might find that you can make big changes. And for other families where kids are really stressed out by change, you may find that you need to make small changes. So you really have to assess your own situation. But the other, another element of that structure is parents provide the food and kids decide what to eat. Mm-hmm. So as the parent, you are in charge of deciding what's going to be those snacks, what's going to be those meals. But you also want to be kind and loving and to serve at least one food you know your child is comfortable with. Mm-hmm. That's essential. It is not kind to feed your child liver and onions and roasted garlic and I don't even know, like whatever foods you think are very strong. And, you know, it's not kind to serve a meal that is all foods your child is really going to have a hard time with.
Yeah.
So you always want to have at least, at the very least, one food your child is very comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And then you can go from there. So if your child is only eating chicken nuggets, that's one of their five foods that they'll eat. Well, you're going to serve chicken nuggets at one meal, right? But you're also going to serve two or three other things that you want them to learn to like to eat.
Yes.
And part of the structure, part of that balance is, yes, I'm deciding what is served, but you're deciding whether to eat it and how much. Mm-hmm. And that is really where the magic is. And it's also the most scary part.
Yeah, I imagine.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, you have such a command of this knowledge, but you also, you do have your struggles yourself. I mean, obviously, in the beginning, you're talking about your child gaining weight, but what are some of your more recent struggles? I just remember you showing something on your story, and it was like little M refuses to eat sandwiches. Is that your older one?
Yeah, that's my younger one.
Your younger one, little M.
Yeah.
What does M stand for?
His name, which he prefers to keep to himself.
Oh, okay. I see. Oh, that's so cute. Oh.
Yeah, we were like, oh, we're never going to name our kids two names that have the same letter. And then I was like, oh, we have to pick this name. And from that point on, we've been calling it like Big M and Little M. And for their first Halloween, we dress them up as M&Ms.
Oh, oh my cute. God. Yeah.
That's which cute. Isn't exactly on brand for me, but it was cute.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Nothing off limits, right, per se. Right. You have your treats. But so, yeah, what are some of your biggest struggles lately, aside from obviously the gaining weight one?
Yeah, so I think every 3 months, it feels like you have a new kid. They're like in a new developmental place. You just never know what they're going to come up with. And all of a sudden, little M comes into the kitchen and says, I do not like sandwiches. And I'm thinking, wow, I have two jobs and a husband in graduate school and two of you. And now you're telling me you don't like sandwiches? What? But being the parent that I am, having a little bit of experience under my belt, I look at him and I say, oh, you don't like sandwiches. Okay. And I just drop it, right? We just carry on. He needed to express that himself. And I offered him something at that meal. What was offered was sandwiches. He didn't have another choice. There were other foods that were available to him, and he chose to eat those other foods. So, you know, I don't remember exactly what was on the menu that day, but probably, you know, maybe some strawberries, some carrot matchsticks, and, you know, his sandwich. And so he just ate carrots and strawberries for lunch. That's fine. That is typical young child, toddler, preschooler behavior for them to go, sit down at a meal and say, you know what, I'm only eating the strawberries. And you say, okay, that's fine. But here's the thing. As the parent, you don't have to serve strawberries for the rest of the day. If they ate 2 days worth of strawberries and they got all their fruit intake that they need, you actually don't have to serve fruit for the next day and a half if you don't want to. Mm. You can then say, okay, well, we've had our strawberries. And for dinner, we're having chicken and rice and broccoli or, you know, whatever it is. And I know my son really likes all of those items, actually. But it's all about kind of strategically planning your child's diet so that if you see them eat a lot of one thing, which is a normal behavior, that's fine. You don't have to serve it again that day. You can take a break and you can say, okay, I don't have to give them, you know, something highly palatable. Instead, I could just give them another healthy food that that may be acceptable to them at that time.
I love that. That's like a really simple tip, but also just It's like all these little tweaks that you could make.
Right.
But in that situation, like, who knows if he really doesn't like sandwiches or he doesn't want to eat that sandwich right then.
And exactly.
Then, you know, and so he just, that's the way he wants to express that he doesn't want to eat it. Yes. It's like, I don't like sandwiches, period.
I feel like you're a good parent already because, you actually don't know what's going on in your child's mind. It might have nothing to do with sandwiches. Mm-hmm. It could have everything to do with the fact that you chose their shirt in the morning and now they're like, well, I'm going to assert my independence over the sandwich because you made me put on that shirt.
Wow.
And that's the thing. Like, we can't take whatever our 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-olds say personally. We can't take it personally. And we can't sacrifice the structure based on that. But we can lovingly engage with them. And we can say, wow, you're telling me you don't like sandwiches anymore. Okay, well, we're having a sandwich at this meal, but let's think about what other things we can have at different meals that you do like. Oh, you like quinoa and bean salad? That's great. How about we put that on the menu for tomorrow?
Awesome. I love that. So, you know, since you clearly promote all this healthy diet for kids, do you have some, like, overall guidelines that you would say, I guess maybe past, you know, I don't know what different ages, like how you kind of break it down, but mm-hmm. what are some overall, like, healthy guidelines for kids that parents can, like, start with or see if they're on the right path?
Sure. So I like to think about nutrition guidelines for kids as, like, goals to shoot for. Because if you've been a parent or you're thinking about becoming a parent, maybe you have the idea that, like, it can be unpredictable. You never know what a day is going to bring you. So I like to think about it, like, how do we kind of set up the structure in our home so that we're shooting for the right thing? And what I like to think about is what's on each plate. So I want to see something that has fat, like a good fat source, some protein, something to give them energy, which would be either like a starchy vegetable or like a whole grain, and then a fruit and vegetable or fruit or vegetable. Mm. So that you kind of have in your mind, you know, they're going to get something substantial, but they're also going to get those exposures to the fruits and veggies. And then they can choose, because kids, they're growing at different rates. They're going to eat a lot when they're babies. They're going to eat less when they're toddlers. Preschoolers, you never know what they're going to eat on any given day. And so you want it all there, whether it's a meal or a snack. Like, for me, meals and snacks are the same. They're just at different times of the day. Mm-hmm. And maybe, you know, meals are a little bit bigger, or maybe there's more variety at a meal, but you're still getting that fat, protein, fruit and vegetable, and, you know, some sort of whole grain or starchy vegetable or something like that.
Nice. No, simple. I like those guidelines.
And, you know, if it's overwhelming to you to think, oh my gosh, a fruit and a vegetable at every meal and snack, that's like, I mean, with some kids, that's like 12 a day. And, you know, that's my goal and what I shoot for. How often do I actually do that? I don't know, maybe 50, 60, 70, 80% of the time, depending on the week. So it's all about having a framework in your mind that you kind of add to as you can.
Basically, nice. This is real life. No one is perfect.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. If it can't fit into real life, then I can't promote it.
Well, as far as, you know, early childhood development, say toddlers, is it really important to make sure that they get, you know, like, adequate protein for proper brain development and things like that? Like, do you have a certain, like, a target you try to hit with your kids' protein more mm-hmm. so than, well, I guess protein and fat would be more important than, like, the starchy carb, right? To make sure they have the adequate healthy fats and the healthy protein. Do you have a target for that, or do you just kind of, like, intuitively?
Yeah, that's a good question. So if I had a kid who's exhibiting any sort of challenge with eating, then I might get clinical on it and, like, start doing calculations. Otherwise, for the baby age, the nutrient I'm most concerned about is iron. So breast milk does not have sufficient iron in it past 6 months, and that's why we really encourage complementary feeding of high iron foods. So that's going to be key. And then, and even it's important to get it in the diet even for formula fed infants as well, mm-hmm. because although formula has iron, you still need it from food. Then when they're toddlers, I'm most concerned, and babies, I'm most concerned about fat intake. They need that fat for their brain development more than protein. It's really difficult for kids not to get enough protein unless they're extremely picky. So everything has protein in it. You know, all the meats, dairies, beans, nuts, seeds, all, even fruits and vegetables have some protein in it. Unless you have a vegan child who is specifically like not eating beans mm-hmm. or something like that, mm-hmm. then it's really difficult not to get enough protein.
Okay.
That's good. That's good
to know. But yeah. fat, what I find is a lot of parents are like, oh my gosh, they're still scared about fat. And so they're not feeding their kids fat, and they really need that fat for brain development. So I always recommend add fats, like buy full fat dairy products. I personally recommend grass-fed dairy. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to do dairy, buy the full fat. If you're going to do anything else, I mean, you can add avocado oil and coconut oil and olive oil. You can drizzle those on top of all sorts of things, but add that fat in.
Okay. No, that's a good tip. I mean, I think slowly people are starting to no longer be afraid of the fat, right. but I could see like adults are afraid of fats. They were for a long time. So that goes down to their children.
Yeah.
Right.
It's crazy. So you're transitioning to this healthier diet with your kids, or you're already there. And then you have these social situations and you have grandparents, and I've seen you talk about these things. What do you do about those situations? And I think maybe, do you have difference for handling like family versus social situations?
Mm-hmm. So with social situations, I don't get involved. I don't like micromanage my kids' nutrition choices. Now, when they're under two, they don't really need sweets. They don't need crackers, chips, cookies. They don't know what's going on, and they don't know what they're missing if they've never had it. So in that case, I would choose what my child is going to eat if they're under two. But you'll see around two, or if you have an older sibling in the picture, kids clue in very soon to like what's going on, and they want to participate in the social gathering. I don't micromanage them. They eat whatever they want at parties, and I don't get involved. Like, we don't make a big deal about, quote, healthy food versus, quote, unhealthy food. Mm-hmm. That distinction, there's not a lot of research to show teaching kids that actually helps anything, but there's quite a bit of research that shows when kids think something is bad, then they want it more.
Yeah.
And so I actually go to great lengths to level the playing field between highly palatable foods and not. Now, we don't have tons and tons of highly palatable foods around our house, but I do keep it there. And when I serve it with a meal so that it's just kind of like there right next to the broccoli. And you'd be amazed how many times I've seen my children and other children eat the broccoli first and leave half of their cupcake on their plate. When you just have this
level playing field
of like, yeah, cupcakes come and go, we have them fairly frequently, why do I need to like eat a whole cupcake when there's broccoli right there? And broccoli is good too, but that's also not special. Mm-hmm. Right,
that's really smart. I'm gonna have to work on that,
right?
Because it's hard.
That's gonna be hard for me because I already have my preconceived notions about it,
right? You know? Well, also, like, Chris and our brands is very much like we're trying to teach adults the difference between more nutritious choices versus less nutritious, and still try to stay away from the like good and the bad, because mm-hmm. like having guilt associated with food doesn't do well for adults. So, but in educating adults, you got to educate them on what are the better choices. So it's interesting with children. I could see what you're saying, just because they're not going to be as sophisticated as a knowledge base at that age, for mm-hmm. sure. So,
but I'll tell you what they're better at than you are.
Okay.
Is they're much better at listening to what their body wants.
Yep. There we go.
That's what they're really good at. You will learn so much from watching your child eat something when you provide the structure and then you let them decide what to eat and how much. It is amazing to watch a child, like if you truly trust them, which can be such a hard leap, but when you do, what you watch them and you're like, oh my gosh, they're really listening to what their body needs. They ate almost nothing today and they're eating as much as me tomorrow. And then the next day they're eating tons of veggies because I was off my game and didn't provide a lot today. It's just amazing. Like we'll go on vacation or something and we'll visit people who have a different eating style than us. And after a couple of days, my kids will start asking for a salad, or they'll start asking for broccoli. They'll be eating it cold out of a baggie that we found somewhere. And, you know, it's because they're actually listening to their body. And we haven't given them that baggage of like, this food is good and this food is bad.
Wow.
Because they're gonna grow up and they're gonna go out into this world that just has like sugar coating all over everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what are they gonna do? If they grew up feeling restricted and like feeling like they shouldn't and they're bad if they eat that and da-da-da-da-da, most likely research suggests they are gonna binge eat their way through college, right? They're gonna
absolutely
be like, yeah, I can eat as many cookies as I want.
Oh, I can use the anecdotal fallacy right now and say that that's definitely the case with me, because my dad didn't have anything other than, like, you know, I would say the most unhealthy breakfast food we had in the house was Raisin Bran.
Yeah.
Like, he wouldn't ever allow like Cocoa Pebbles or like Cookie Crisp or whatever. So I went over to my friends and like, whenever it was time to go sleep over there, I had like 2-3 bowls of cereal just because they had all the junk cereal, and right. I want ham essentially.
Yes.
So I totally get that. But do you see that there's any behavioral changes? So say if your kid is eating poorly for like a few days, mm-hmm. and processed food and a lot of sugar and things like that. Let's just say directly after Halloween or something like that.
Oh my gosh.
Do you see any behavioral changes in terms of like irregularity, like hyperactivity, or even like kind of, I don't know.
ADD?
Yeah, ADD kind of stuff like that.
So there's so much research showing parents believe without a shadow of a doubt that sugar causes hyperactivity. And it is just, it's a myth. Like, really? All the research shows that parents are wrong. What happens is, like, there was one study where they gave kids some Kool-Aid, quote, and they asked parents to rate the kids' behavior. And then they gave them water, and they asked the kids, like, it was water in both cases, but they asked the parents to rate their behavior when they had water and when the parents thought they had had Kool-Aid.
Was it like colored water when they thought? Yeah.
It was just water.
Yeah.
And the parents rated the kids who had Kool-Aid. They rated their behavior totally differently, where in reality, the kids were exactly the same and both had water. The parents perceive that kids are hyperactive after sugar because of this narrative that someone came up with that sugar causes hyperactivity. It does not. What often happens is sugar is served during parties and things where they're excited. And yes, they are hyperactive because everybody's excited. The other thing we know is that dyes can cause hyperactivity in some children. That is also well established. So if you have a child who is sensitive to a dye, it can actually cause hyperactivity. So that might be what is being seen in some other things.
So there's more truth to say, like, not necessarily processed, but processed food that uses specific ingredients. Mm-hmm. And so that's has more weight to it, or that's the only thing that has weight to it in comparison to like the sugar argument. Yeah. Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah. Now, the other thing is, I mean, like anyone, you can have a sugar crash,
mm-hmm.
and that is going to be accompanied by tantrums and fussy kids.
Great.
And, you know, and like with everything, you know, sugar is still, especially refined sugars and like candy bars, is definitely like an inflammatory food that is going to really stress your system. And we know that there's research showing that when you eat a lot of refined sugars, it does lower immune response. Mm-hmm. So it's not to say that, you know, eating a ton of sugar has no influence. It's just, it's not going to cause hyperactivity, and it's also not going to kill your child. That's the other thing.
Right.
Inappropriate amounts.
Yeah.
Kind of like, I mean, what exactly how you suggest it, where you have all this structure, but if they go to these social activities where you normalize like a cupcake with dinner, like they're going to be fine. In fact, it's like a good balance in life.
And, you know, when it comes to Halloween, we actually let their kids eat as much candy as they want. Mm. And last year, my son ate just a huge amount of candy. And the next morning he woke up and he said, wow, you know, I think I ate too much candy. His idea, though, right?
Right.
Like, to give him that experience of learning. Now, he was 5 at the time, right? But that sort of experience is where real nutrition learning comes from, mm-hmm. is when they experience it for themselves.
As a parent, you're just so happy. You're like, yes, I can't.
Yeah, I didn't rub it in or anything. I was like, yeah, well, you know, tonight we'll have one piece with dinner, right?
I hope I'm as cool as you. Like, she's way too cool about everything. I mean, I'm sure you have your moments, but you're still way too cool about this. But I mean, I think I've heard other parents say that about like how great a lesson it is. Like, they go to a social situation, they eat too much food, and they have a stomach ache.
Yeah.
And they learn so much. So it's good to hear you repeat that.
Right. I mean, you can cram as much nutrition knowledge down your kid's throat as you want. And research suggests that will not make them want to eat it anymore, and they may or may not eat healthier as a result. Mm-hmm. But when a kid intrinsically is like, wow, I learned that broccoli feeds the bugs in my gut, which is something we talk about in right. our house, then they're like, they tune in, and suddenly I have my toddler saying, or you know, my 4-year-old now, but when he was 3, my bugs are screaming for broccoli.
That's so right? cute.
I mean, I can't yeah, I pay it's for awesome. Something like that. Right. I love that. Right? But that's him listening to his body. I'm not pushing this on him. He's asking for it. He's feeling that.
Mm-hmm. I feel like lesson of the day from this podcast is don't be too pushy.
No, yeah. absolutely. I mean, because I, you know, literally 5 minutes before this podcast, I had a different outlook on this altogether, you know, and right. you're making me second guess what I had planned yeah. on my approach being, you know. No, granted, like good. I'll probably have a little more leniency, but I still think that one of the big things I do want to prevent is not creating that habitual craving of sugar, sure. you know, like thinking like, oh, I always get this at this time of day, you yeah. know, it's like it's time for a Capri Sun, you know.
Right, right.
So I think it's the whole hard. Idea of getting out of a habit, or actually never forming the habit, mm-hmm. but you know, but still not being too restrictive.
Yeah. You know? So you know, it's a hard balance, and what to do about dessert is really challenging. Now there's, you know, lots of people who do different things. What we found works for our family is to try to like stay out of that habit, but also to provide it enough so that they don't feel restricted. And mm-hmm. the older they get, the more likely they are to feel restricted. So you're like binge eating cereal when you're at your friend's house, right? Yeah. Which is it's a biological response that is predictable and normal. And I don't know if healthy is the right word, but it's like totally normal. There's yeah. nothing wrong with what you were doing. That is what bodies do when
we're
they feel
wired
restricted.
To do that, you know?
Right, exactly. So we need to work with our kids. So my son, I noticed, started sneaking chocolate chips every chance he got.
I'm seriously Chris. You're describing Chris right now.
Which is a totally normal behavior, but it gives me pause. Like, okay, is he feeling restricted? What's going on here? Does he need independence? Why is he sneaking? So it's like, okay. We also know that kind of preschoolers to grade school kids have a biological drive to eat higher carbohydrate, sweeter foods. And we think it's related to bone growth. And their need for high energy foods. So if you have a kid who's like not eating enough, what are they going to crave? As much energy as they possibly can in right. the smallest bite, which is going to be like a chocolate chip or something. So he's getting chocolate chips all the time. I'm like, oh, I'm kind of thinking about it because I could go two ways. I could really push him on this. I could make it a deal, which could possibly push him in the disordered eating path. Or I could stop. I could think about it and I can watch for a little bit. Think, okay, what's happening? Let me observe. Then I think, you know, I think he might be feeling restricted. He's not getting enough of these foods. So for this past summer, I bought a box of, Annie's Bunny Crackers or whatever, the little cookie ones. And I bought some little dye-free chocolate, like M&M type things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I calculated it. I mean, 6 M&Ms has like 1 or 2 grams of sugar, which is the same as like a bowl of Cheerios. Right. So I mean, it's not that much sugar. You mm-hmm. can actually give your kids sweets throughout the day and meet the goal of like, you know, 20 grams or less if that's your goal. So I just started putting it in his lunch almost every day. Just a little, let's say fun food, which mm-hmm. is what I like to call them.
Yeah.
Or a play food is another way that I, another good word. And the sneaking stopped. And nice. And the cost of that to his health was like, I don't know, like 12 M&Ms a week and, you know, and normal dessert. I mean, it's just not that big of a deal. Even if he ate 6 M&Ms every single day for the rest of his life, like, that's just not that big of a deal.
Especially with how much energy kids are burning and stuff like that. Like, and compared to what we were raised on in our generation, I'm not sure about your parents, but like my parents didn't know anything. I mean, my dad knew a little bit about nutrition or whatever in terms of like, because he was an athlete, but as far as the intricate stuff that we know now, mm-hmm. it's just night and day. And so like we ate like crap comparatively. So anything that I do, even like if I take what my plan is and then cut that in half, it's still better than what we are raised on, you know? And I'm relatively okay. So I'm probably overthinking it or whatever.
I mean, you look okay to me.
A lot of people, yeah, who knows what was going on the inside. but you're definitely making me rethink a lot of things on this, which is great, you know. But also I do like how your approach is like how you know what you want, but you take the, it's kind of like the counterintuitive approach because it's more educated approach. Like you come from a professional background, so you're like psychologically getting into your kids' heads, whereas like you know a normal approach might be like, oh, I'm just gonna will this into reality, mm-hmm. and you're probably gonna get the negative effect. So
I will also say, being the parent of two strong kids who know what they want, and you know, I have to learn how to work with that, it has taught me a lot about setting boundaries and also giving kids room to grow and learn for themselves. It's, you know, when we're talking about like how to teach kids to be competent eaters long term, we have this idea in our mind that maybe we just want them to only eat healthy food at the end. And what we find is like, that's not always healthy. Like we even have new eating disorders now, like orthorexia, where people are afraid and they are not eating healthfully because they're so afraid of all the things going on. They've watched various documentaries that are fear-based. They've read all these books and they're like, oh my gosh.
There's heavy metals in the vegetables. You can't eat the vegetables.
Yeah, exactly. And my question is like, at this point, what can I eat? Right. Tell me. Yeah. Because I'm a professional. And if I made a list of every DM I got from people who are like, oh my gosh, eggs are going to kill you. Oh my gosh, the Brussels sprouts are going to kill you. Did you hear about that arsenic Brussels sprout poisoning in Connecticut like 20 years ago?
Oh my goodness.
I mean, like, there is no food group untouched by this. Mm-hmm. And I really believe that in a world where, you know, our food system is not perfect.
No.
And we don't eat perfectly. And our food environment is not perfect. So does that mean we can't be healthy and happy people? I don't know. I mean, that just seems unfair to be like, well, it's broken, we're screwed. Like, I don't think that's true. I think if we really come and we say, you know what, our best thing that we can do is to eat the widest variety of foods that are accessible to us, we start to dilute the things. Okay, so arsenic has rice and oats have weed killer and cumin has BPA and eggs have cholesterol, you know.
Right.
Like, okay, but if you eat the widest variety of foods you can, then yeah, you get a little bit of this and you get a little bit of that, but you also get all the good stuff too. Mm-hmm. Like, right. Our bodies are meant to like detoxify us.
Right.
Yeah.
And they generally, for most people, work pretty decently, you know? And yeah, there may be health effects, but we have to choose to live in a way that's not fear-based, because fear will kill us too, you know?
Right.
Yeah definitely. I know it's been an interesting, you know, struggle to find the balance, obviously, like providing that education and providing what might be some better choices, but also like not creating fear, which comes down to the language you use,
right?
Which I've learned a lot throughout the years. I definitely, like, if you saw what I wrote 3 years ago, you'd be like, you're creating eating disorders. So I've definitely learned a lot, which is great.
Yeah, that's amazing.
But it's great to hear your perspective and find that balance. And you should enjoy life, definitely.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, we're in the age of information, but I think it's a double-edged sword, because you can find a doctor that will back anything. Literally,
absolutely.
That backs anything, whether it's a,
that's true.
Whether it's like some holistic remedy or the idea that one specific thing in our environment is going to kill you tomorrow. Like there's somebody with an MD behind their name that's spouting it, you know?
It's true.
And so it's like, it's kind of one of those things where it's actually hard if you believe in too much, if you don't believe in yourself and your own critical thinking skills, and you put all of your trust in the idea that somebody has an MD after your name, then you're going to be in the weeds and you're not going to know what to turn. But like, find a couple gurus that make sense to you and follow their methodology and you know, don't overthink it, you know,
and listen to your body.
Yeah. I think listening to your body is like the real key. Like, if I can teach my kids to stop eating when they're full of their own accord, I won the game, mm-hmm. right? Because so much of the kind of angst that we have over what people are eating is different foods are trying to get us to eat more. Companies like formulate their foods so that we eat them more. All mm-hmm. these different things, social situations, restaurants are double portioning, all these things. If I can teach my kid to just listen to their body and to find that place of calm where they can hear themselves in this noisy world and turn off the TV and eat at a table and enjoy their food and enjoy their family that they're eating with. If I could do that, I won the game. Like, mm-hmm. what more could I ask for, you know?
It's so crazy because you can apply that knowledge. Like, you're talking about nutrition, but you can apply that to anything in life. Like, that's right. just great general advice.
Right, that's true.
So you kind of went over, like, social situations. How do you apply, you know, how you handle that? But when it comes to more your family, I've heard you talk about this a little bit. Because since family is a little bit more often, you know, if grandparents or other relatives are kind of intruding into your structure a little more often, what are some suggestions with that?
Great question. And I have to say, family dynamics are really challenging because every family has different dynamics. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've already experienced that just with your two different families and seeing, wow, things are really different. So I don't have like a magic bullet for talking to your family. What I have found, so sometimes it helps. So if you have a family who really respects a doctor or a pediatrician or a dietitian or something, I have like a growing number of grandma followers who the kids are like, hey, mom, can you like go follow this lady on Instagram? And suddenly the grandmas are like, oh, I could do better feeding my grandkids. So you can find an authority for grandma to follow. And then they feel like they're cool because they're also on Instagram, right? Mm-hmm.
So follow, if you're a grandparent, you must follow Kids Eat in Color.
That's right.
That's Jennifer, right? Right here.
That's one way. You can also go to your pediatrician and say, hey, can you write a letter for me that says my child is not allowed to have juice? Especially if the pediatrician is making a recommendation within the American Academy of Pediatric Guidelines, like kids under 2 don't need fruit juice, like that's a recommendation. You can ask them to put that recommendation in writing, and then you can give that letter to your caregiver.
Can you maybe elaborate on why that is for some of our listeners?
The juice under 2?
Yeah,
they don't need it, you know? It's
when just way too much sugar for someone that age.
So most, now, you know, if you're home juicing and you make this like juice for your kid and they drink it, that's fine. But most parents are giving their kids like a fruit juice concentrate juice, which is an added sugar. And kids really don't need added sugars before 2. They never need them per se, but under 2 is a really special time in mm-hmm. life where they're growing. They just need those nutrients. Juice doesn't provide that many nutrients other than energy and maybe a few vitamins and minerals.
Right. Well, also because most of the juice is pasteurized, like for safety, but mm-hmm. then that kills a lot of the helpful vitamins and minerals. Goes back to why making it at home would be an okay choice.
Yeah. And I mean, really, they need to be learning to drink water and also milk or a non-dairy, you know, substitute for milk would be a good option because that has a ton of fat and protein mm-hmm. and vitamins and minerals.
Awesome.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's good.
So, I mean, when you're talking to grandparents, what I've also found helpful is just to say, hey, I know, I mean, grandparents must spoil their grandkids.
Right.
It's like not optional and that's okay. So if you think that you can get your grandparents not to spoil your grandkids, you need to change.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's not even my kids, it's my sister's kids, but I'll go home back to St. Louis and go to my parents' house and they have all the cabinet stocked with food for her kids. And I'll just go through and circle all the bad stuff on all the labels in there. And no matter what, she's like, yeah, I need to get new stuff. And then I'll go back 6 months later and she's still got the same stuff.
But I'll tell you what you can do instead is one, you could bring substitutes.
We started doing that. Yeah.
So you can bring healthier substitutes, and the more you can bake the goods, you can do it all because there's often like a healthier version or something that they still feel like they're treating them. You can also set limits. You could say, hey, mom, you could feed them ice cream once a week, or you know, in my mom's case, she really likes giving them ice cream. So, okay, mom, you can give them ice cream once a day, right? That is a compromise that has worked for me. And my parents love that. They love that they don't have to feel guilty about, you know, giving their kids an ice cream cone when they're out and about. And, you know, it doesn't, you know, that's just not every day, right? Mm-hmm. And that's okay with me. But you can tell them, hey, you know, instead of this, can you take them to a balloon shop and get them a balloon? Can you take them to the zoo? Can you buy them a stuffed animal? Like, tell them all. Can you take them to the dollar store?
Give them like ideas.
Tell them what you want them to do. Don't tell them what not to do, because if you tell them what not to do, they're just going to keep doing it, right? But if you actually go in and you say, you know, I really want you to do that. Where you really run into the challenge is where there's unhealthy family dynamics, there's poor communication, and you're just trying to like manage a healthy family. In that case, you may just have to say, you know what? It's not worth it to me. I'm going to focus on the relationship, and whatever happens here happens. And then we'll go back to eating healthy at home. And that's okay too. So you really just have to really...
Some great tips, though.
I know that was always now. Granted, my parents don't live in town, so I have to deal with it. But your parents do, so that's gonna be one of those. We'll find out.
It's not easy. Let me tell you that. Now, some grandparents like are totally on board. Mm-hmm. Some relatives, like, you know, I have a brother who's like, just makes kale cool. I mean, like, I'm super lucky, right? He's like, hey guys, let's eat some carrots together. And they're like, yeah.
Oh, see, there's some manipulation in that. See, that's my whole trick. Cause like, I know that, you know, if there's some stubbornness and there's a battle of will power between me and my kid, it's like, there might be some manipulation involved just to get what I want. But like, if I let a kid out manipulate me, then I deserve to lose that battle. So like, that's the thing, is I know that there's going to be those like time crunches where like, I really don't have time to deal with this kid right now. So I'm going to play some mind games with him real quick.
You'll give him a lollipop. I bet you money.
Oh my goodness.
I'll bet you money. You're going to find yourself giving your kid a lollipop on an airplane, and you're going to be like, oh my gosh, what have I done?
Wait, don't you have a bet? Chris actually has a bet with a friend, because his friend...
I do. I said that I will not give my kid fast food in the first 5 years.
Oh,
and
that's totally doable,
right?
And my friend absolutely, he's like, I don't think that you'll make it one year, like actually 1 year past toddlerhood, you know. So like, he said, I'll give you till three, but I guarantee you're not making it till five. And I was like, that's a bet we're making.
You know, I've actually never taken my kids out for fast food.
Really?
And I'm actually not a fanatic. I'm not a health fanatic. I've definitely given them plenty of other things, but we just never go. So why would I ever take my kid?
Okay, there
it
is.
I don't know. When would I take him if I never go?
Yeah, I think that if you're already eating fast food, then that's
then you're definitely going to give your kid.
But I haven't had fast food in like 13 years.
Yeah,
neither
of us.
Actually, no, I'm sorry. I slipped up once when I was drunk in St. Louis, like a year ago.
But here's the thing. If you think that you're going to feed your kids differently than you eat, then you're mistaken.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Your kids are going to eat whatever you eat. So
that's what it goes back to.
Yeah. So if you have the habit, it's not that like I have this huge like, oh my gosh, fast food is the worst thing on the planet. You're never going to hear me saying something bad about it. It's not part of my life. I don't feel good when I eat it. So I just don't, I eventually stopped eating it, and I can't imagine going back to eating it knowing how I would feel if I did. So for me to bring my kids would be like really weird. At the same time, this past year when my oldest one was in kindergarten, he said, hey, what's that restaurant with the M? Because of course, M is like the most popular letter in our house.
Mm-hmm.
Big M, a little M, right? Yeah. And we were both like, oh yeah, that restaurant. We just were like, oh yeah, look, there's a restaurant with an M, right? And then his friends started saying, hey, they go to McDonald's and they really like it. And he was like, can we go to McDonald's? And we were like, sure, we'll go to McDonald's. And my husband and I are like, what are we gonna do?
My goodness,
I don't know how to eat there. I mean, I honestly, to get rid of that curiosity, I would totally take them if it was a true curiosity,
right?
So they asked about it a little bit. And we just said, sure, yeah, we'll go there. No problem. That's a restaurant.
It's like, ignore it and they'll go away.
And actually, in this case, it did.
It works.
But it's going to come back. And they're going to want to go there because their friends talk about it. Mm-hmm. So we're going to go there. They're going to have some food there. and we're going to move on. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to start going there frequently because it's just not my thing. My guess is I'm not going to want to eat there, and that's okay. Like, I don't have to eat there. And my kids, like, they'll get some food. I won't buy them a Happy Meal because I think that's unfair marketing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we'll buy them whatever, a hamburger and some fries, and we'll go to one with a play place. And I guarantee you, they're going to take two bites of their food and then they're going to play, and that'll be that. Mm-hmm. And they will be like, okay, it was like a playground place. Right?
This is your approach to everything is so smart, though.
It's calculated, you know? I like it.
But she's so casual about it is the key.
Well, it's the internal angst and like hysteria that you have to contain.
Yeah. But you're containing even around us. Well, so that's like, I have a little bit too high. I need to like contain it.
Well, it's going to be very visible to your kid, and the kid will pick up on it. They're intuitive, you know, especially to the mother, you know?
Yeah. I need to meditate some more.
Don't be deceived.
I'm not sure. I mean, does you were saying before our podcast started that you are intuitive enough to know when somebody else is feeding your baby a bottle, right?
Oh yeah.
Does your husband have that?
No.
Okay.
No,
there's a little bit more.
There's something magic. I mean, if you are in a position where you're breastfeeding your child, there is a connection that is like unexplainable.
Yeah, unparalleled.
They've actually done some research on like mama bear instinct, and if you're nursing your baby, like your ability to go mama bear, which is a thing,
mm-hmm.
talk about like going nuts in mm-hmm. your brain to protect your baby. Yeah, that's a thing. So
wow. Well, yeah. While we're on that subject, so this is such an interesting thing to hear about breastfeeding that way, but so did you do mostly breastfeeding and then some formula, or like
So breastfeeding is like a real challenge for anybody who wasn't aware. I breastfed my first child and we had like a lot of trouble, but I had kind of had like kind of a traumatic birth and a lot of like postpartum depression and anxiety. So I wasn't really able to get help. Also, he screamed incessantly in the car seat, so I like couldn't go anywhere. So
wow.
We just kind of suffered through it. And around 4 months, it like kind of got better for us. And then it was a really fulfilling and enjoyable experience for me. And that's why I decided to continue to do it. And I nursed him until I was about 5 months pregnant with my second child, and I couldn't gain weight and I had no energy. And I was like, I gotta wean this kid. Like, this breastfeeding is real, like, it's a real energy sucker.
It's taxing.
That's how we say. Really?
I've heard that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, tons of energy and, time. But it's also, if it's something that works for you, and not all moms have this experience, but it can be really, really fulfilling and a wonderful bonding time with your baby too. So there's a give and a take there.
Mm-hmm.
So I weaned him, and then I, had my second child. And the thing is, he was really attached to nursing. Like, really attached. He may have been one of those kids who would have been like nursing at 8. I don't know. And when we were getting ready for his new brother, we read all these books and they talked about nursing the baby. And he was like, oh, babies share Milky. And I was like, yeah, sure. The baby shares Milky with you. Right. Cause I didn't want to like create any
jealousy.
Yeah.
Early
yeah
on.
Right. Yeah. Cause like the adjustment to a new sibling is tough. So
I mean, I'm sure if you don't manage that properly, you know, you can also give your child a lot of psychological damage or other issues. So that's
a lot of stress. Like a new baby is like the most wonderful experience and also one of the most stressful experiences, right? So new baby's born and my toddler comes up, is like, baby brother share Milky. And I was like, I'll call his bluff. He's been weaned for 4 months. Everybody tells me he shouldn't know how to nurse anymore. Not only did he remember how to nurse, but he was instantly like, oh my gosh, it's back. He was so happy. Oh my gosh. And I was like, oh crap. Now what? Because I had sworn I will never tandem feed my children. That is ridiculous. Who does that?
Mm-hmm.
Note to self, never say never as a parent. So I was like, okay, playing it cool. We'll just stop. Then things started to escalate between the new baby and my toddler, right? Which is a totally normal thing, except it was kind of extreme in my case. So like I'm having to protect the baby from the baby brother, who is simultaneously adoring and also violent.
Oh, wow.
But it starts to escalate. I'm like, oh my gosh, what do I do? And now Milky gets brought into it. So now the baby is getting Milky, which is the most wonderful heaven-sent substance on earth. And I was like, I can't have this be part of it. It's already too stressful. So I tandem nursed, which meant I nursed my toddler and I nursed my baby, and I did it for 9 months. You always want to nurse the baby first, FYI. Mm. Okay. In case you're one of the few who decided to tackle this. So he knew that it was the baby's Milky and that he would also get some Milky. And I will say, like, that was the most literally and figuratively draining experience I've ever had as a mother. Mm. Like, recovering from birth and simultaneously nursing two humans. It's like really, really intense. But sometimes, like, they would actually nurse at the same time and they would, like, gaze into each other's eyes. And I just wonder if there's, like, some sort of, like, magical bonding, because now they just, like, have this connection that is so deep. Mm-hmm. I have no idea if it's related to nursing two kids at the same time or not, but it's fun to think about. Mm-hmm. So yeah. And with my second one, he was really jaundiced, so I actually supplemented him with formula in the hospital to help clear that. Mm-hmm. So I am a total advocate for, like, if your doctors are encouraging you to supplement with formula and it seems like for a good medical reason, go for it. There's no reason to, like, just
be so afraid of
yourself and so afraid of yourself. I mean, there's plenty of research showing the damage that jaundice does to babies if it's not cleared. Mm. And there's no research showing a little bit of formula supplementation for something like that is going to hurt them.
Yeah, so it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, the same with, like, if you're not producing enough milk and you've tried everything, even if you really wanted to nurse, and your doctor's like, look, the baby isn't getting enough. There's so much research showing if babies don't get enough, that is to their detriment. There's no research showing that, like, if you supplement a baby with formula, that suddenly they're going to, like, be some sort of sick, inferior baby. It's just mm-hmm. not a thing. And if the breastfeeding is causing, like, postpartum depression or anxiety, which for some moms it does, there's all sorts of things. If you have a body that's just not good at breastfeeding, it's totally okay to use formula. And mm. some women just choose formula based on their family situation, which is also okay.
Well, staying on the supplement theme, like, now you said your oldest is 6 right now, right?
Yeah.
Do you give him any supplements in terms of, like, a probiotic mm-hmm. or a multivitamin or anything like that?
Yeah. So I did a lot of research on supplements and, you know, research is still developing mm-hmm. in this area. We don't know optimal supplementation for humans.
Especially for kids too, you know.
Especially for kids. And I feel like for me, I always want to be conservative on that because we don't even know, like, the right forms of vitamins to supplement mm-hmm. for kids. And, you know, I wish that I could stand here and or sit here and say all kids need a multivitamin. There's, like, never been a research study that's been able to show, like, across the board benefit of a multivitamin for kids, unless they have a deficiency or, like, so I usually recommend it if a child is, like, a really picky eater, mm-hmm. Or, like, a pediatrician recommends it or something like that. Because there's definite, like, really helpful uses for those. But just, like, across the board, I don't see that. So I don't give my kids a multivitamin. What I do give them is a vitamin D supplement. So we do know that it's almost impossible to get enough vitamin D from food, even for most adults. Now, if you live in LA and you're, like, out in the sun all the time, mm-hmm. that's one thing. But we're in Maryland and... it's
yeah.
just not.
Yeah, three, so 4 months I do, out of the year.
Yeah, yeah. I give my kids, and I recommend for most kids, and you could talk to your pediatrician about it, but most kids can benefit from a vitamin D supplement. Mm-hmm. Kids who are supplemented with vitamin D to have optimal levels are less sick in daycare. If they're in daycare, it's a real benefit to the skeletal system and the immune system. And then my kids do take a probiotic. My first kid was a C-section, and I think C-section babies often, I was also a C-section baby, I think C-section babies just have a little more trouble with their gut. But of course, research is at a point where we don't know exactly what that means yet. So we don't know how to repopulate their gut to be the same. We don't know what the optimal gut composition is. There's just so many unknowns. Mm-hmm. But there is some research showing kids who take specific probiotics in daycare, because my kids were in daycare, they had less diarrhea and less RSV type things and upper respiratory viruses. So because I had my kids in daycare, and let me tell you, kids in daycare get a lot of things. I was like, what can I give my children to help at all? So I do the vitamin D, I do the probiotic, and then I also do fish oil. Mm-hmm. Because I know we just don't eat enough fish. And that's right. If our kids are eating like 2 to 3 servings per week, they're probably getting enough omega-3s. If they're not, they're probably not. We don't know that for sure, but I feel comfortable giving an omega-3 supplement in that case.
Okay, nice. Yeah, that's good to know, because I mean, I guess those are the bare minimums right now, I would say, for anybody, you know, like the fish oil. I wouldn't say I usually give clients a multivitamin and things like that, but yeah, the vitamin D is crucial, and I obviously having it with fat. You have them take it with a little bit of fat too.
Yeah, they actually chew a capsule, a flavored capsule. So it's in a fat emulsion.
Okay, nice.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Optimized.
Yeah. That's genius.
Well, do you have the next?
Well, that's kind of all the questions I have for you today. So I wanted to wrap up on the last question, would be if there's one area you think parents should try to master first or tackle in the household or with their kids first, that would give them the most benefit, what would you say that would be?
So I think the most important thing that the most parents struggle with is the idea of allowing their child to eat, allowing their child to choose what to eat and whether to eat. And when I say what, I mean like from what you've provided. So whether to eat and how much is a better way of putting that. And really no pressure. Like, don't pressure your child to eat healthy. Don't pressure them to not eat unhealthy. Don't pressure them. Provide the structure and provide a rock solid structure for them. But leave what goes in their mouth to them. And that is where you'll see the biggest bang for your buck in terms of developing a competent eater. That's also the most challenging thing.
That's awesome.
Oh, yes, I like that.
So yeah. Where can everyone find you, get connected with you, and do you have any like courses or products that help with parents struggling to get their kids to eat healthy?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram at Kids Eat in Color.
It's like kids dot
it's kids dot eat dot in dot color. But if you just type in Kids Eat in Color,
it'll show up. Comes okay, up. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm also at kidseatincolor.com for more kind of in-depth articles and all the nuance on stuff. And then I also have a course, Better Bites, for parents who are really struggling with picky eating and want to like go step by step. How do I actually get my kids eating vegetables when right now they're just eating goldfish crackers and chicken nuggets? So that's a group program, and they get step by step, like do this activity, you know, here's how to implement this no pressure policy around mealtimes, provide the structure and provide the nurturing. And we just have awesome results in that course.
That's awesome. We can definitely link out to that course and obviously your social media website in our show notes. But we're so happy you came out to LA.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thanks, Amanda and Chris.
I learned so much today.
Are you going to be here the whole weekend? Thanks for the weekend.
I'm just going to be here today, and I'm going to leave tomorrow morning.
Oh, nice. Okay, I was going to say, you got out of doing our workout, because our workout's going to be this weekend.
Oh my gosh, guys, I cannot keep up with your workouts.
Well, thank you everyone for listening to the show, and we can't wait to catch you on the next episode.
Absolutely. All right, bye.
Bye.